Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour.
Hey, good evening, and welcome to Audio Road. I'm your host, retired transport officer Dale Howard. And having a little crisis this evening. Boy, technology, you got to love it. Anyway, you're things all sorted out, I think. So let's, I've got some hands up. Let's start taking some calls. It's a little different tonight. Lisa and Kevin have the evening off. And what will happen is I will give you the last four digits of your phone number and take your questions. So let's go to 0193.
Well, good evening. How are you doing there?
Well, not worth a darn, but thank you for asking.
a little bit of a technical difficulty tonight, huh?
Oh, man, I hate technology. I really, really do. But we got it worked out.
That's good to hear. Well, my question tonight I had was on the rear end. I don't know if you're good at technical questions on the... I have heavy 40s on my Freightliner. I got a 2010 rolling glider, and I was curious if I were to single it out and use that heavy 40, are they strong enough to haul heavy loads if you were to haul, 110 plus with it? Do you think it would hold out?
And you're just going to run it as a single axle?
Yeah, I'm wanting to go as a single axle. I was thinking of going as a single axle. It's either going to be a tag or the pusher, the lift axle. But I was curious if they call it a heavy 40 because it's got the heavier housings. I'm not sure if the gears are heavier or not. I'm curious if you know anything about them or if they would hold up to hauling, I used to be gross anywhere from 110,000 to 117,000.
I don't think they are going to be heavy enough because that's a pile of weight for one axle.
That is, yeah. I mean, I've been doing it with both of them, and they haven't had any trouble. But I don't know if one of them could withstand it.
It's where are you running?
Wyoming, Colorado.
You know what? That is, they're Rockwells, I take it?
Yeah, they are Rockwells. Yeah, they're 321s.
I would have to bow to Rockwell's superior knowledge. And that's, boy, before I did anything, I would go after them because I just couldn't say for sure.
Okay. And I just had one other point I wanted to give. I did that Evans coolant conversion, and I ran the truck from 40,000 miles. And when I got around 39,000, I started having a lot of trouble with overheating. And I took it to CAT because the motor was still under warranty on an in-frame. And they said my water pump had went bad. But they said the water pump pressure was fine. It just started leaking coolant into the oil. And
okay.
So I was losing about a gallon of coolant every 500 miles. And
well,
it was heating up. I mean, it was getting up there about 240, 250. The buzzers were coming on. It was threatening to shut me down and all that. And it didn't do it for about the first 38,000. When I got on 39,000, I started having trouble with it. So I drained it all out, flushed it out, put the regular coolant back in before I took it back for the warranty work. And so they put a new water pump on it. It's not overheating now, but now I got other issues. I'm using about a gallon of coolant every other day, and I got to take it back. And we're suspecting it's got some cracked head or blown head gasket now. So pulling them heavy loads, for some reason, it didn't, with the Evans coolant, it pulls the heat more. So when I first started doing it in the summertime, I really wasn't having an issue. It would get hot. It would get pretty close to where the buzzer would come on, but it wouldn't come on. But it was always running right up to the limit. And then for some reason, it just all of a sudden just started overheating on me. And even with an empty trailer, 40,000 pounds on gross from a train set, and
yep.
it just took a little hill, and the temperatures rise up, and the buzzers would be on, it'd be shutting me down. And So I just want to put that out there. I don't know if anybody else has had this trouble with the Evans coolant. I did have the 215 thermostats in it. I even converted them back to the 190s before I took the Evans coolant out, and I still had the same issue. So
right.
I'm not having an overheating issue now, but I have other issues now.
Well, all right, we'll throw that out there, and gosh, good luck with your other issues. For those of you who are just joining us, I'm Dale Howard. I'm a retired transport officer. I retired out of a 23-year law enforcement career, the last 7 of which were spent in commercial vehicle enforcement. So I'm too honest to steal, too lazy for a paper route. So I did the next best thing. I bought a truck. I'm an owner-operator, leased to a major carrier. So Kevin and Lisa have taken the night off. And I'm at the helm here. We've finally got all our technical issues all ironed out, so I'm coming to you live from the beautiful TA truck stop here in Ontario West. If you're listening to us online, please give us a call, 347-884-8327. And I'm screening and hosting tonight, so I'll give you the last 4 of your phone number. And let's go to 5354. And good evening. You're live on the show.
Hello.
Hi there.
Oh, we're trying to figure out who's talking, I guess. He's on the other line. We've been reading about the new proposal.
Oh, for our hours of service.
Oh, yes.
Well,
something.
I'm all ears. What are your thoughts?
You know, I can't for the life of me. I've read through part of it. I've printed it off. And I've read through quite a bit so far. And I don't quite understand the point of a 16-hour day if you're losing an hour. Why fix it if it's not broken, I guess is my thought.
Well, yes, and I'm glad you you emphasized the point proposal. Because I'll do that.
Yeah, it's just that. It's not went no further yet. It's just that.
Absolutely. Wednesday, just on a little sidebar, is they're going to open that up to the 60-day comment period, and I would encourage everybody to take a deep breath and write a comment of what you would like to see in that. The FMCSA, to their credit, in all the listening sessions, flexibility was
a big issue.
Yes, and I think that's what they were trying to accomplish when they gave us the option of extending our day by 60, you know, to our window 2 hours to 16 hours.
Yes. But
is it perfect? Absolutely not.
Oh, no. By no means. I've seen some things where they've stated one thing and turned around the page later and come back and said something else, and I went, what?
You know, truly it is written in government speak.
That is the one good thing I have in tow for me, is that I'm a third-year criminal justice student. So I understand quite a bit of it. But they just aren't making enough sense. They're not coming up with as many good points as they should be.
Well, from what I have gleaned out of it, is they have given us the flexibility of extending our window to 16 hours twice in a 7-day cycle.
Mm-hmm.
What that will do for us, I haul produce, I haul refrigerated freight.
So does my husband. He's reefer too.
What that's going to do for me is on where I unload here in Southern California, I unload at 4:30. So that day awfully short. So that's going to be a benefit. They have taken away 1 hour of our work time,
Yeah,
so,
which is something I didn't quite understand. Why give a 16-hour day when you're actually not? You're actually taking away an hour.
Well, they're forcing, you know, they're forcing us to lie.
Yes.
Like we do right
Thank
now.
You.
And they they're also setting us up for form and manner violations. With the we now have to document in our logbook our reset, our restart. And if you don't do that, that's going to be a form and manner violation.
Now, I have not seen in there yet where they're going to make restarts mandatory. Are they going to? Have you caught that?
Maybe, and that's final.
Mm-hmm. That was what I got, maybe.
My interpretation of it, and that's certainly going to come out in the... you know, in the rule is, yes, you are going to have to reset.
Do they not understand what that's going to do to a lot of gentlemen's home time?
Oh.
What about the gentlemen that are out there that are attached to their families and their children and their wives? And there's a lot of drivers that don't have that attachment, yet there are many, many more that do.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and again, I think what is going to happen, and this is my own personal opinion, it's going to be a give and take. And I think we are, personally, I think electronic EOBRs are coming. And I think that is going to be one of our trade-offs, is we're going to kind of maintain the status quo. And I think... in exchange for that, I think we're going to wind up with EOBRs.
Well, that's kind of forthcoming anyway. I mean, I don't see any way around that one.
You know what? And again, I mentioned this on the show last weekend. When these new rules are announced in July, if this comes out July the 2nd, July the 3rd, we're back in court. No matter which side wins this, we're going to be back in court.
Yeah.
So, personally, I don't see any big changes for another at least year. After
yeah, because, you know, someone is going to have to raise, think about it. Either which
well,
way
you know
it
what?
Goes.
Sure, if Public Citizen and Crash and NAD don't like what they see, they're going back to court.
Oh, yeah.
And if the ATA doesn't like what they see, they're going back to court. So this is a win-win for the lawyers and a no-win for the industry.
As reading it, I really thought I want to take my career further and just become a lawyer for the trucking industry. Because it's
oh.
And
it's,
I just kept reading, and I'm like, oh, my Lord.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I hate to interrupt in this conversation, but... we used to work for a major carrier that had Qualcomm electronic logs on
yep.
the 60-second intervals. We actually ran more miles on it than we did off of it, but there were a lot of times they would use it to push drivers. No, we show you how the hour, you have to do this, but we don't care what rest you haven't had or what rest you have had. This is legal if you do it this way. And one example was we took a 10-hour break, woke up from our 10-hour break. We were told to drive 1 hour and take another 10-hour break so that night we could relay a load and do 600 miles. I'm like, so you
yeah.
want me to be up 11 hours before I load a 600? No, you rest. I just woke up. I don't care. It's legal. Whatever.
And, you know what? And, yeah, that is certainly going to be an issue. And... I don't know how we fix that, other than
I don't think there is a way to fix that.
No, and
the only
you
way
know what? The FMCSA, bless their heart, they are trying, and we have to realize they are a collection of bureaucrats.
Yes, exactly.
With very, very limited knowledge of the trucking industry. And right or wrong, these are the guys that are writing the rules. they have tried, and I think one of the intentions of taking that, going back to that hour they took away from us, they have no authority to spank the shippers and receivers, but I think this is their way of driving the point home that, you know what, these guys don't have a lot of time. Don't be dinking them around. And that's not going to, you know, that's just going to penalize us. That's certainly not going to do anything to the shippers or receivers.
Which is really a bad thing, because that happens all too often, that drivers are stuck just sitting for hours upon hours.
I'm in the hurry up and wait mode right now myself.
Oh.
We just picked up a load from the largest meat producer in America, who, after giving us a load, a couple hours later, changed it to a multiple pickup and requested the truck show up 3 hours earlier than originally scheduled. Not possible due to the travel time. I showed up an hour and 20 minutes later than they had re-requested the truck. 5 hours later, I get my load, the first load picked up. And according to some of the wording in this new proposal, we're supposed to be able to perceive this happening?
The unanticipated.
Yeah. Well,
that's
and
what me.
Well, and I know who exactly you're hauling for, because I've had some of their loads myself, and I'm old and lazy and retired, and I kind of put my foot down, and you know what, if obviously you're not in a hurry, because they're notorious for not having their paperwork ready, so if you're not in a hurry, I'm not in a hurry, so reschedule the load. And of course that just causes all kinds of panic and gray hair to my dispatch. But you know what? I drive a Peterbilt, not a 747.
You got a good point, and maybe that's the point in the statute that we need to take. You know, you're not in a hurry. Why should we be?
You know what? And bad planning on your part does not constitute a panic on my part.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, no problem, and I really appreciate the call and the input, and like I say, I would encourage everybody to take a deep breath and go into the FMCSA's website and put a comment, because honestly, I do believe that they are listening to us. And
it seems they are.
Yeah, and that's...
I've printed it, and I've read quite a bit so far. I think I've got 36 pages left. And it seems they're listening and they're trying, but I'm not so sure they exactly know what they need to be trying to do.
You know what? And in their defense, I mean, they're trying to please everybody, and that's just not going to happen.
It's not a one-size-fits-all kind of industry.
It is not. And it's when you've got all the special interest groups, and you know, we're no different, because we've got all our special interest groups, the ATA, OIDA,
exactly,
you know, the Truckload Carriers Association, it goes on and on and on. They're kind of pig in the middle. But thanks very much for calling in, and we are going to go to 8731.
Jimmy the Junk Man checking in.
Jimmy, how are you doing?
I was just plugging away. I've got the Evans coolant in my truck. I've had it in for about 6 months, and I'm loving it. I'm getting a little better fuel mileage because I'm running a warmer engine temperature. There's no pressure in the system, so I don't fear, blowing hoses and so forth. And I switched to a system of four electric fans.
Okay,
and,
how's that working out?
It's working out fine. I have to modify the fans to get a little more pull on those warm days. I'm not getting quite enough air across my air conditioning condenser. But as far as, you know, keeping a nice, even, steady temperature in the engine, It's doing great, and I had a minor leak, and solved that. It was the heater core for the bunk, and other than that, it's been a trouble-free system. Just loving that Evans cooling.
Oh, no kidding. Actually, I just got to throw one thing in here. For anybody that's sitting online, please push one and jump into the debate, and we'll certainly get to your calls. Forgive me, my internet connection is very, very slow, and we've had some technological challenges for tonight. With those four fans, what do you think you're going to have to do to fix your air conditioning problem? Can you kick one on and get enough airflow through without sacrificing some fuel mileage? Or?
Well, they're electric fans, so I'm not going to lose any fuel mileage by running the fans. So I'm not worried about that. I've got to close the space in between the fans, and I got to move the fans a little bit closer to the radiator. And I think I'm going to be good there. Maybe I'll get a little stronger fan and try that out. So I'm still in the experimentation process, but it's definitely showing an improvement for me.
Oh, okay. What did you wind up with for fans? Are they an automotive, I guess fan motors would be my question.
We used a standard common fan out of one of the aftermarket automotive catalogs. I forget the name of the catalog, but everybody knows the name of it. It's a real common thing.
Oh, okay.
What
is their life expectancy?
Well, they didn't know for sure. They don't come on a whole lot, you know. So I think they last a long time, you know. I'll probably run them more in the summer, but. So far, like I say, I'm real happy with it.
Oh, okay. What's the hottest temperature you've been into?
Oh, I ran 80,000 pounds in July, you know. I don't know, 80, 90 degrees out there.
Oh, okay. And no issues at all, eh?
Yeah, it just wasn't quite cool enough on the air conditioning end of it. But fuel mileage, sometimes you got to make some sacrifices. I've been doing, got a long-term average of 8.62 in the winter. Not bad.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. Drive slow. Make more dough.
Absolutely. Yeah. The speed limit is just a suggestion. And actually, if I can have a little rant about fuel economy. I went for a little walk around the TA parking lot right after supper, and I am just amazed
at
the amount of trucks that are sitting at a dead idle. We even walked past one guy who's obviously saving the wear and tear on his APU because the truck is hammering away at a dead idle, and his APU's not running.
Well, that's probably because the APU is not functioning right now. I've had three APUs, three different manufacturers, and they're just not that dependable.
Really? Well, you know, this is a very well-maintained truck, and I'd be amazed if it's not running. But, you know, it's a nice night down here in L.A. It's, you know, very light jacket weather. Like, what are you thinking? You know, no wonder we have so much DPF issues and government agencies driving around telling these clowns to shut their trucks off.
Well, I've had to run my idle twice so far this season. Once for 5 hours and once for 6 hours. So it's been a hard winter so far.
Well,
I like to turn it on below 10 degrees.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Now, as far as running slow, I got a problem because my carrier is kind of pushing me a lot of times to run as fast as, 61 miles an hour. And that's hurting my fuel economy. But when they put this, if this proposal goes through and they cut my number of operating hours in the week or the month, I'm going to have to drive faster to make the same money.
Well, no, they're not going to take away any of your driving time yet. They're open to suggestions for the. Their wording was they prefer 10 hours, but they're open to the 11 hours. And I think the ATA and everybody is going to be kicking and screaming to maintain the 11 hours because, FedEx, UPS, ABF, everybody has got schedules done up, for 11 hours of driving. And the chaos... I mean, we'll survive if they take us back to 10, but the chaos that's going to cause for, all the freight companies, I don't think we're going to give that up.
Well, the ATA might scream a little bit, but all these organizations that are causing the representatives to modify the hours of service are going to be kicking and screaming if we don't go to 10 hours.
Well, and
so,
it's, the nice part about this is Virginia Tech did quite an extensive study and a very well done study. I've read quite a bit of it, and it was very well done, very objective, and the data does not support, the sky is falling if we stay at 11 hours. The standing joke is, the most dangerous hour they found was the first hour. So if anything, we need to get rid of the first hour of driving.
Yeah, get rid of the first hour.
But it's the data does not show the danger of keeping 11 hours, and the government is all about numbers and data. So, like I say, it's going to be a give and take. Personally, we are going to get stuck with EOBRs, and I think that'll be one of the trade-offs to keep the 11 hours.
Well, part of the thing, I'm at one of the larger carriers, 2,500 trucks, and one of the reasons I'm here is so I can run a legal logbook and drive slow and prove that you can make a ton of money driving slow and turning an illegal logbook that matches your Qualcomm. And I'm just tired of it. I'm absolutely tired of it because a lot of times I've got to drive when I'm tired and I've got to, sleep when I'm not. And and I think we might just be better off to just throw the whole hours of service concept in the waste bin and let the driver, who's a grown-up man, drive the truck when he's ready, willing, and able, and park it when it's time to sleep or read or get fuel or recreate.
Well, and you know what? On that point, I got to move on. But, Jim, if only we could. I remember back in the good old days when we didn't have hours of service. I was dispatched under, if you slept, that was just bad planning on your part. And there's just way too many unscrupulous people out there to take advantage of us. But it is going to be what it's going to be. And, we're just going to have to adapt and overcome. And I think when the dust settles, it's not going to be, all doom and gloom. But we're going to move on to 3901, and good evening. You're live on the show.
Good morning, Kevin. Rob Ganger calling.
Hi there.
I'm not sure if I'm calling at the right time or not. I've got a question about my truck. Should I just hang up and wait for another night?
Well, give it your best shot, and I'll give it my best shot. How's that sound?
Okay. I appreciate it. I have a Kenworth T300, and
okay.
I've got a haul and tow deck on it for hauling RVs and towing
yep.
one behind it. And right before Thanksgiving, my ECM went out on it, which didn't give me much to be thankful for. And then right before Christmas, I was idling at a rest stop for about an hour and a half, 2 hours. Started driving, and the thing is just missing, especially under load, it would miss. And, you know, everybody had their theory from a injector going out to water in the fuel, all sorts of different stuff. I've been running the Motorco Optimizer as my fuel additive to try to take care of water in the fuel. And I brought it back into my local shop in Goshen, Indiana, and they took the filter off, said, yep, there's water in there, screwed a new one on, said, good to go. And I picked the truck up, and it almost ran worse. So they took
what
it back in. I've got the ISC 8.3 Cummins.
Okay.
And I took it back to them, and they said the engine was coated with diesel oil or diesel fuel. And so they cleaned it off with brake fluid, and they saw an injector line or a fuel line leaking where it goes into the injector on the number one cylinder. So they replaced that, said, man, everything should be good to go. And I fired the dumb thing up, and it's not good to go. And I'm just twisting my head around trying to figure out. I'm headed east towards eastern edge of Pennsylvania, and I talked with Cummins at Pittsburgh, and they said, well, come on in if you need to. And, man, I've got 820,000 miles on the engine. It had a top-end rebuild done at 500,000. I've only been driving the truck since June. And I'm just, and I don't know if you can help me out or not, you know, just with this information and not seeing the truck, but I'm just kind of scratching my head going, what in the heck?
Did it, after they replaced the ECM, is that when your trouble started, or did it run decent after that?
No, it ran well for about 5,000 miles. Now, I think the ECM had been toyed with a little bit to get a little more power out of it. It never had the power with the new ECM that it had with the old one.
Okay.
And like I say, I bought the truck 760,000 miles on it. So I don't know what they had done when they did the rebuild or, you know, sometime when they put an ECM on. I understand you can juice the power through the ECM. Is that right?
Well, you can adjust the parameters with the ECM. You know, you can bump horsepower. You can bump torque. If those settings are available in the ECM.
Okay.
Do you get anywhere near Minneapolis, St. Paul?
Now you ask me. I was up there three times in December.
I went into Cummins and St. Paul, and I was very happy with the work they did for me.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, I don't know what to tell you other than, yeah, you're pretty much... I'd go back to Cummins and get them to hook up to the thing and you know, see what they can find.
What do you know about Pittsburgh Cummins?
you know, I've never been out there. I'll tell you, do you somebody that have you thought about trying Pittsburgh Power?
I thought about it. I don't know. It, you'd have to educate me on if they'd have a good guess on it. I know
that's,
you know that.
You know what? I would go over there because Bruce Mallinson is the absolute guru on diesel engines. And if anybody could get something figured out, Bruce is the man. I would give them a call. And do you have their number?
I can find it on my phone without a problem.
Okay.
I've got a Big Mac in my hand and a cigarette in my other hand, a Mountain Dew in the other, and I'm driving, so I don't want to try to write, you know.
Oh. See, I'm the retired enforcement guy. That's multitasking way too much.
I'm joking. I just don't want to write and drive at the same time. So
absolutely.
When I make a stop, I'll search it on my phone. Can I ask you another question?
Absolutely.
Is 10 to 12 miles a gallon decent fuel mileage for basically a bobtail on steroids?
Yes.
Okay. Because
you know what? I had that. I had a T-300 incident command unit that I was responsible for when I was on the job, and it had a 22-foot van body on it, and
okay.
We used it. You know, we used it at, you know, at accident scenes and, you know, major incidents. And,
oh, I'm sorry. I'm Kevin, am I?
No, it's Dale.
Oh, okay. I see. Go ahead.
And it, you know, that was the greatest little truck. And wherever it went on its way to a call, because it was fully equipped, that truck went as hard as it would go. And it would cruise at just a hair over 100 miles an hour. And it, you know, that was the standard deal when I went to Kenworth for a service. They rushed over and plugged into the ECM to see how fast that truck had gone for how long. And one night I chased my sergeant to a call, and he was in a Crown Vic, and he could not get away from me.
Wow.
And long story long, that truck went out hard and came back at a reasonable speed. And I averaged just over 10 miles to the gallon with that.
Wow. What transmission was that?
It was a 6-speed auto shift with the 3176 cat.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I've got the Eaton Super 10 in it. And if I run this thing at 62 miles an hour, you know, even with it hiccuping all the way down to Alabama and back, I ran 1,100 miles and I had to squeeze 100 gallons of fuel into it. And that's with it running poorly.
Wow.
And
well.
So, yeah,
well,
I heard someone say with Bob.
Nope, sorry, looks like my computer has moved on. Sorry about that. Yeah, give Bruce Mallinson at Pittsburgh Power a call, and I'm sure he can shed some light on that. And if you're anywhere near their shop, yeah, please, by all means, duck in there, and I think they're going to be able to help you out. Let's go to 5435, and good evening. You're live on the show.
Good evening. Got a Canadian law enforcement question. I go up to Canada quite a bit and all hazmat up there, and I was always stopping at railroad crossings, and I noticed that people would get mad at me. So, and then I see on the fuel haulers it says we stop at uncontrolled railroad crossings. So I call up my carrier, a a large carrier based out of Jacksonville, Florida, and the hazmat people say, oh, no, 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 it's the same as it is in the States, you know. So I felt kind of it wasn't the right answer, so I stopped in at one of the scales, and they told me, oh, no, 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 that's just for where there's no lights or gates. It's only uncontrolled. And I neglected to ask them if that's for all the provinces or if that was just for, you know, Alberta. So, yeah, it was in Alberta when I asked that question.
Oh, okay. What exactly are you hauling?
Oh, it's usually corrosive, usually blacked because I haul totes mostly.
Okay. Yeah, it's the requirement was for flammable liquids, gasoline, diesel fuel, avgas, and it's you're required to stop at an uncontrolled railroad crossing. So yeah, he was right. But
all right.
With a corrosive, you don't have the issue. It's only a flammable liquid.
Okay, see, that's considerably different than what we have in the States. So I'm going to call the hazmat department and tell them because it's just not safe doing it because you don't have the spots to pull over and that, you know. And particularly I come in through Portal quite a bit, and there's that one hill, you know, on the way to Estevan there at the bottom of the hill there's a railroad track, you know, and it's a very bad spot to stop. So,
yeah, but you're you've got a corrosive. It's not a flammable liquid, correct?
Yeah, usually. So
it's class 8.
All right. Well, that answers that question. I'm the guy that was, you know, experimenting, picking up the axle on his trailer and got the boat tail and that, and he wanted me to send you some pictures, and I tried one time, but your mailbox was full, so.
Oh, okay, yeah, I remember. Yeah, please give that a whirl. I think I've got that problem solved.
Oh, okay.
Because you were going to, did you ever get a hold of the engineering branch of Alberta Transportation?
No, because I'm my intentions now are to deadhead home, and I was going to do some more work on various aerodynamic projects and finishing that up was one of my intentions. So. Getting the underrunment part of it and the filling in some gaps here and there and, you know, sort of finalizing it is on the plan. So after I get that done, then I might go ahead and do that. So.
Okay. With that tail that you put on your trailer, have you run any numbers yet to see what you... have saved?
Oh, well, for a long time. I mean, I save anywhere between 5 and 10%, you know, 10% if I'm really light, you know, or empty, and 5% if I'm heavy, because it always cuts the drag the same amount, but it's, you know, the aerodynamic drag's a higher component when you're light, you know, so... And I had been running pretty good. I've done all sorts of things, you know, having coolant and the fleet air filter and low rolling resistance. I just recently went to Super Singles, and I had a 90-day average of 9.15, but since it got cold, my mileage is just kind of fell off the cliff, and I've found several problems. I had accidentally damaged the turbo boost sensor. I found a couple of air leaks in the turbo boost air system, and I've just recently had to replace all my fuel lines because they're starting to come apart. I should have listened to Kevin and just automatically have done that, but appears to have come up a little bit, but right now I'm kind of having a hard time getting much over 8, but we'll see now after the fuel lines. This is the first trip, and hasn't been too good of one, heavy and wind and like that. But
okay, well, boy, 8 is certainly respectable. Do you have the air tabs as well as the tail?
No, there's not enough room when you open up the door. I have it along the roof.
Okay.
And that was mainly just to kind of keep some of the snow off the roof, because there's a little bit of, there's that, a lip there because of the ledge where the lights are, and then the top angle's down. So if you had a real heavy, wet snow, it ended up being quite a bit of weight on it. So I put that on, and it seems to eliminate most of the snow except for right behind the lights, so maybe about 6 inches. So, yeah, it works. So I've been pretty happy with it. Right now I'm working on air underneath the truck. Got an air dam in the front. But, doing quite a bit of experimenting.
Okay. Now that we've had a taste of winter, are you finding that back end fills up with snow? With the swirl?
No. You mean sticking to the outside of it? If you have a really wet snow, it can. But otherwise, matter of fact, one of the pictures I was going to show you, you normally only have snow collecting. It's kind of hard to explain unless you see it. But it certainly you can see where it cuts down the amount of snow collecting back there. But if it's a heavy snow where, you know, it sticks to the side of the trailer, yeah, you can have issues. But it doesn't really hurt anything. It just snow sticks to it. You know, it's not like it gets too heavy or anything like that. So it's not that hard to just take it, whack it with a hammer to knock it off anyway. So.
Oh, okay. Well, that's, please give that another try whenever you get a second. And I think I've got my space issues solved in my mailbox.
Yeah, I've got some better pictures of it too, but I have to get my can't find my USB cable for my camera. I have to do that, but I'll send you what I got. I have your email address on one of my older logbooks there, so I'll give it a go. So.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and sure appreciate the call and the feedback.
Well, I appreciate the definitive answer on the hazmat stuff there in Canada. So I'll tell them you don't even have to stop anywhere with corrosive, you know, and the flammable. It's just at uncontrolled intersections because the hazmat guy, he assured me it's exactly like in the States. So I said, well, I don't know. I don't think so.
Our regulation and the nice part about that, it's a federal regulation, so it's good coast to coast. It's flammable liquids only.
Yeah, well, that's good. I forgot to ask that when I was in the scale. I'm thinking, well, maybe it's just the Wild West, you know, but it's nice to know it's through the whole country. So. I stopped in at one of the scales. I braved it, and you know, they didn't actually bite my head off or anything. They're really quite friendly. So,
you know what? And that is an excellent point, and I'm glad you made that. For anybody out there, and I can't stress that enough. You know, the guys in the scale are just cashing a check the same as everybody else is, and they are more than happy to, take any question you've got, and yeah, you know, pull around back and, you know, walk in there, and you know, if you've got an hours of service question or a logbook question or or whatever. You know, walk in there, pump whatever you got down on the counter, and am I doing this right? Am I doing this wrong? You know, they are there to help you. And when you walk in with the question, yeah, nobody's going to write you the ticket or bite your head off.
Well, in the States, you know, you might pick the wrong guy, but I've found it pretty friendly up there. I spent quite some time. I got inspected up in the Yukon, and I was there for probably an hour and a half. They all wanted to see my aerodynamic stuff. I put it out and showed it to them and talked about this and that. And when it comes time to the onboard recorder, that's just going to screw me up, though. I'll have to...
Well,
I'll throw my time off.
Yeah, it's. I don't think it's going to be the end of the world quite yet. And yeah, the guys in the Yukon are great guys. We did all of their training for CVSA. I was a CVSA instructor on the job, and yeah, our department hosted quite a number of courses that their guys attended. And yeah, just a great group of guys. I think they get lonely. That's why they like doing all the inspections and. Yeah, they're just happy to see a face.
Well, he said if we didn't inspect up here heavily, there'd be a lot of junk running across there to Alaska. And, you know, it's, I suppose that's true. It's up in the wilderness there, and, you know, we got to watch them. So.
Well, out of sight, out of mind, and I got to agree with him there. I was banished for 2 years in northern Alberta, and, yeah, there was some interesting stuff.
Well, when you can drive 15 hours a day, you know, I mean, you know, you got to watch the people because they might want to try to drive more. I don't know how anybody drives that much, but
you know, and you're absolutely right. And I know Jimmy alluded to it earlier that you know people should be smart enough to you know to control themselves. But yeah, you're right. I mean, north of 60. Yeah, you've got 15 hours, and they still have logbook violations. Like, how much do you want to drive?
Yeah, well, it's a lot easier to drive that in the summertime than it is in the winter, though, I'll tell you that. It's, although in the summertime you don't want to drive at night because there's almost more animals out on the road because they only have a little bit of time to do their moving, you know? So,
yeah.
Pretty scary.
No, I hear you. Well, the music is going to start to play, so thank you very much for the call, and I'd like to thank everybody for a great year. It's been a lot of fun hosting the shows, and my apologies for getting a late start this evening, but we had some technical glitches. But I'd like to take this opportunity to wish everybody a very happy and prosperous new year, and remind everybody we should have a compliant new year because it's you can run compliant and stay profitable and stay in business. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Tomorrow evening on the podcast, Eldon is hosting the show. Kevin and Lisa are taking a break from the podcast, so please. Call in tomorrow and join Eldon for the show. The call-in number, 347-884-8327, or letstruck.com. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, stay profitable, and please stay compliant.
I got a star on my car and one on my chest, a gun on my hip and the right to arrest. I'm a guy who's a boss on this highway, so watch out what you're doing when you're driving my way. If you break the law, you'll hear from me. I know I'm working for the state. I'm a highway patrol. Well, you know me when you see me, cause my door's painted white, with my siren screaming and my flashing red light. I work all day and I work all night, just to keep a law and order, trying to do what's right. If I write you out a ticket, then you better drive slow. I'm just a